Welcome to the Trap One podcast. This week we're talking about another podcast, The Blue Box Files, the hosts of which are the main characters of Redacted Series 2. Joining me are Denise, Adam and Hannah. Welcome.
Hello.
Hiya.
Hello.
So The Blue Box Files pulls in 500,000 listeners, which just goes to show there are far fewer Doctor Who podcasts in the Whoniverse than there are in real life. How does the Blue Box Files compare with your podcasting experience, Adam?
I don't think we've ever, in any podcast I've done, we've never come close to 500,000, you know. I'm happy when we get 500 listeners, to be honest with you. So I'm just like, you'll never hear the real McCoy or anything having sponsorship or sponsoring or a patron or selling mattresses or anything like that, because it just wouldn't be worth it.
You've not been to one of these fancy award ceremonies yet, then?
No, but that's because there's straining orders, to be honest.
I think it's interesting the way things are going now, where podcasts are so often included as plot devices or indeed the basis of whole TV series like Only Murders in the Building. It's fascinating, you know, this is just something that we do and enjoy doing, but it seems to be such an important part of the culture now.
It brings it right up to date, doesn't it? This sort of little spin-off in the Whoniverse that these characters have got a podcast, I think. So what do we all think of Redacted Series 2 compared to Series 1? Obviously, it's quite a bit shorter. We've only got 6 episodes instead of 10. And it's not the huge kind of universal scale of threat either that the first series posed. So Hannah, what were your thoughts?
I think there's reduced scale does impact it a bit. I only listened to the first series relatively recently, so I think going into the second one quite quickly as well, I was expecting something similar. But that first one is on such a scale, I think it'd have been quite hard to do something similar. It almost feels like a like spin-off from that of, well, we'll go down these more minor roads from now on with Redacted. And I quite like its style, the setup of it. It definitely feels like there's potential here to do more and more.
And Denise?
I liked it very much. Short and sweet. We should probably mention we're probably going to be doing spoilers. So if you haven't listened to Redacted 2 yet, go away and listen to that first. But I am very impressed by the characters and the writing. And it was lovely to revisit some old faces. And it was a really fun listen.
Yeah, so I think fewer old faces from the Whoniverse than the first series. It feels like it cleaves less to Doctor Who continuity, I think, and strikes on its own a bit, doesn't it, this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. I mean, for me, and I think I was on Trap One talking about the first series when you did an episode on that, I said at the time, I liked it, but it felt like there were a little few too many episodes that were like, hey, remember this RTD character? Well, here they are. Here's their cameo. They're gone. It's not really going to tie into the plot, but who doesn't remember this doctor from Smith and Jones or whatever? And you're like, I actually didn't. But this felt, I thought, felt a lot more confident in itself. It was a lot more willing to let its characters take the lead in some ways. And you've still got a lot of, obviously, you've got a lot of like continuity references and old characters like Rani coming in, and obviously it ties in, there's a lot of mentions of Torchwood, and obviously it ties into the Sarah Jane Adventures, but it still felt more like its own thing and a bit more confident for that. And I think the shorter, only having 6 episodes, again, let it be a bit tighter. It didn't take nearly as long for the plot to get going as I felt it did with the first series. So I thought it was actually generally a good improvement all around.
Yeah, I think some other than, and it was kind of more of a Sarah Jane spin-off, wasn't it? Like a spin-off of a spin-off in a way, with having Rani and Mr. Smith. And then the other references were a little bit more subtle. I think the trionic radiation is what was afflicting Rusty the Dalek and Into the Dalek. And then I think, like, is it the inertia corridor was a bit like the Pirate Planet idea. So it was things like that were a little bit more subtle, like you say, than a sledgehammer sort of like, yeah, this is a character from Doctor Who of the Week that's popping up this time.
I wonder if they felt more confident having already established the characters and this separate redacted world now that they felt they didn't need to rely on so much of that to keep people interested when we'd got to know these characters. And like, I liked getting to know the sort of three central characters a bit more in this series.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the case. And then there's a lot of really just kind of interesting new ideas, I think, like the London Underground. I guess a bit like Trap Street, where they could have used Trap Street, but, you know, they've created this. Remind a little bit of Neverwhere.
Yes, definitely as well, yeah. And again, there's a very good audio version of Neverwhere with James McAvoy playing Richard Mayhew, and that's definitely recommended if you've got an Audible account or something. It's very, very good.
Greyhound leader to Trap One. Emergency alert to all radar stations.
Yeah, I mean, I loved being back in Cleo's world for a little while. Isn't she an amazing character? I mean, she's, you know, I'm an older lady and she's so young and so enthusiastic, but she's right about a lot of things, you know. I love her little message when you call her, "Don't leave me a message, it's 2023. I just think, yeah, she's probably right about that, you know. And this other little thing when she's talking about something and says, "Yes, we move," as in, instead of saying we move on, she's just like, "We move." It's just like, you know, the "on" is completely redundant. I'm just traveling away from this. I really, really like her character, and I think she's really cool and nice.
She maybe feels like the main character more in this series than the first series.
Yeah, yeah. I think she's a lot more, I mean, she's a standout, unique character, so maybe she's a little bit more, and she's on her own, of course. She's got her own scenes most of the time. She's isolated from the other two.
Yeah, because they split up with their podcast hosts, Abby and Sean, are quite early on. They've got the separate investigations that then sort of dovetail. So where Cleo is investigating the giant mutant rats, which are afflicting London, which is linked to the same kind of cause as the arachnids in the UK, the spiders, which is a couple of things that don't massively go anywhere. Like the rats thing is dealt with quite quickly, and the alien that the other two characters deal with, it's just kind of a bit of a device to lead them on to other parts of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, I felt that. I mean, to be honest, in some ways I felt Abby and Shona, I actually had trouble remembering separating them sometimes mentally. I was like, which character does that and which character does that? And I almost felt like it felt in some ways like they were just being kept busy out the plot a bit more. Because there's all these mentions of Torchwood that for a couple of episodes, and then it just kind of doesn't get brought up. I don't know if that man, was it Archie they go and visit in the hospital? Is he dead? Is he alive? Does it matter? Who can tell? Because it's just like, presumably an alien's literally burst out of him or something, and they just leave him there. But I did feel in some ways that, that Cleo is so much the main character that there wasn't as much for those two to do. And so, you know, it's not that unimportant. They make the contact with Rani and things, and they come in more at the end, but the focus is so much on her, on Cleo, to the point where, like, their relationship trouble, I felt a little bit forced, particularly like in the last episode, there's a little argument between them that seems to kind of come out of nowhere, and then it's just kind of just done.
It feels like, especially because we've jumped from them at the end of the last series, I think they just are only getting together. We've not had the seeing them together bit to even think they've gone past initial lovey-dovey, like into potential troubled waters, to then have this of the moment where they're sort of both sort of questioning stuff that, well, it's not quite perfect, is it? Isn't it? We've not seen it, evidence really that it's particularly perfect or particularly not.
Yeah, and just to go back to what you were saying as well, Adam, the thing about Archie, I couldn't work out whether he's a character from Tooth and Claw. It didn't sort of ring a bell, because I said, because that would make him from there, from like the origins of Torchwood. But I thought there was going to be a link maybe, because the villain of the piece is also said to be 120 years old. So I thought there was maybe going to be some kind of a link there that they were from the same species, or the same thing had kept them alive for a long time.
I'm trying to remember in because I haven't watched Torchwood for donkey's years, particularly not the first episode. But when Jack's talking about other Torchwoods, does he not mention something about an odd old man in Glasgow or something? There's some kind of line in there, and it's been so long since I saw it, but there's definitely, he talks about other Torchwoods, and there's something about, yes, one just being like this odd old man who I presume was probably Archie, but I'm not 100% on that, to be honest.
Could well be.
That does ring a bell. Actually, I haven't watched it for a long time either, but that does ring a bell. And they steer clear of UNIT completely this time as well, whereas the last series had UNIT in it quite a bit. It's presumably to make way for UNIT appearing in the kind of new TV stories, as it would seem to be featured prominently given some of the publicity. So the other main character we've got is Apex Costa, who is an alien that teams up with Chloe to help her escape from the giant mutant rats. But then there turns out to be more to him than meets the eye. What do we think of this new inclusion?
Well, I was hoping from the first scene that they would get together because they seemed right for each other, Apex and Chloe. But obviously he's morally ambiguous, to put it mildly, and his motives are not completely clear-cut. But I really liked their adventures together. You know, he took her out into space, and that's not bad for a first date, is it? You know. You don't have to date Elon Musk to go into space, but I thought he was, I couldn't believe he was completely bad. You know, I couldn't believe that he was thoroughly evil. So it was quite a ride with him.
I think he's such a cool intergalactic guy when we first meet up with him. And there's initial feeling of perhaps there should have been feeling of he's too good to be true, but he does seem, no pun intended, slightly like down to earth. He's trying to fit in, and he's, just toddling along sightseeing almost. Doesn't seem like he's setting out to be a hero. And I was so disappointed in him when it turned out he wasn't such a straight up guy. I felt like, I've liked you. I want you to get together and be a nice couple. M here, how could you be doing this to her? I'm so annoyed with him. So I was pleased to see that he wasn't utterly evil.
I was just going to say, I think he fits into this interesting tradition that we see in Doctor Who spin-offs, or have at least in the 21st century, I think a lot of Doctor Who spin-offs are always looking for a Doctor-esque character to an extent. And of course he turns up and he's ridiculously dressed, has a Sonic-esque device, magic flute. Which, by the way, he does say, like, he's got the line about, oh, the Doctor did something like this in Hamlin. And I was like, including the bit of kidnapping the children or just the rats, because I know how that story goes. Which Doctor was that? So take your pick. I always say the interesting thing about these Doctor-esque characters, because you've got, like, obviously Jack in Torchwood is the obvious one. I'd argue Miss Quinn in class, and Sarah Jane, actually, in the Sarah Jane Adventures. I think of all of them, Sarah Jane is like the best Doctor substitute, or the one who doesn't screw up as much as the other ones do, or spectacularly. So I think he very much fits into that. But yeah, and it makes sense. Chloe's kind of Chloe. Sorry, I don't know who Chloe is. Cleo is waiting for the. She's like looking for the Doctor. She wants to go with the Doctor. So this Doctor-esque man turns up and kind of sweeps her off her feet. And he is, because the Doctor. I always say that one of the great things about the Doctor's character is their innate criminality. And Apex has that. It just happens to be that his morals are a little more skew-iff, at least at first. Like by the end of it, he seems to have kind of gone on his journey and come round. But I'll be curious if they do another series of this, if he's going to be, if he's, there's plans for him to be in it.
It's interesting that we see that Cleo's, and she talks about having had such bad experiences with blokes prior to this. And she's willing to look past some of Apex's flaws because she has been saddled with such terrible dates and awful men beforehand. And initially, perhaps even if she's spotting things subconsciously, she's perhaps trying to ignore them.
Yes, when she goes on that date early on in the season, early on in the episode, and it's the man starts saying that it's a big deal for him because he's never been out with a trans woman before, and she just sort of just says, okay, boy, bye. And, you know, it's a bit harsh, not even giving him a chance. So she was quite uncompromising. And maybe she was realising that, you know, you have to give people a bit more time sometimes to figure them out, you know.
I think she does seem harsh in that moment, and it did kind of take me back at first. But then when she references afterwards, you know, seems like there is a long line of unseen men. It does seem like she's got used to the red flags, and she's not going to waste her time on anyone like that anymore.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I was surprised that they seemed to end up together a bit at the end. I didn't know if he'd done enough to earn that, given that he had lied and betrayed her a couple of times and things. I was surprised they were so sort of uncomplicatedly together at the end of it. I felt like if Chloe had successfully summoned the Doctor in the TARDIS, he would have quite happily, you know, given it to his ex and you know, got off on their merry way sort of thing. My favourite bit with him, though, is the sort of two kind of like montages he gets. There's the one of where he's giving his day in the life of this agent sort of thing, and it's all like, you know, I kind of get up and do some mindfulness and have a vegan smoothie and cycle to work and all that kind of stuff, and then I get coached, and then that's really funny. And then the other one is about what really happened to him, and it was like, I tried to become a professional gambler, and then he sort of loses all his money, and then he's been involved in some weird crypto coin thing. Oh, it says it's not crypto coin, it's imaginary money. And she goes, yeah, completely different.
It was a while ago that I listened to this now, and since then we've had the first two of the three Doctor Who specials, and one of the things that they talk about in Redacted is the Doctor is completely missing from his timeline. And I was wondering if that was something that would sort of come out in the specials a little bit, and I'm not sure that it has as yet, because I was thinking, well, we've got the 14th Doctor is wearing the 10th Doctor's face, seems to be there to do something very specific, so perhaps, you know, this is happening while the 14th Doctor and Donna are having their adventures, presumably with the toy maker pulling the strings. But I suppose, and, you know, once that is resolved and it's Shu-T'Gatwa, then the Doctor will be back in his timeline again. But I'm not sure. I think maybe I was just thinking too hard.
Yeah, because I think the crash at the very end, when Cleo and Apex are together and it says they're looking at Camden and there's a spaceship crashing, I took that to be the Meeps spaceship crashing.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
Yeah, that I took it to be the intro into that. So yeah, I'm not sure about the Doctor missing bit, is whether it's just with the 14th Doctor when he's kind of careering around immediately post regeneration, going to Skaro, to the genesis of the Daleks, and then reading the bedtime stories for the CBeebies and that kind of thing.
It's all starting to fall into place now.
I'm glad we're agreeing the CBeeb stories is canon.
Yes, yeah.
I thought it was when I watched it. I was like, yeah, he's definitely in canon. I mean, the interesting, because in that Children Need sketch, he says something, I can't remember, it's a very quick line. The Doctor says something about timelines or canon being disrupted, which is obviously a little bit of a joke about what's happening. But yeah, I wondered if there's going to be some kind of, we're going to see something next Saturday when the giggle airs about that.
Because the thing in this story is there's no follow-up to when Rani uses Mr. Smith to broadcast out into the universe about the Doctor being missing. I thought that might kind of lead to something like some alien...
maybe season three?
Turning up. Yeah, there are some good things like that that they can use in season three, aren't they? Because there's, you know, they've introduced sort of Torchwood, but not really contacted anyone from Torchwood. You've got the guy who's the temporal kind of merchant who's got his shop that sells things through time.
Oh, yes. Like... Mr. Shah's Emporium. Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me of Evil the Daleks that a little bit with the where they do that kind of, with the antiques from the past, but he's using sort of alien technology and things from the future.
And cat food.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, lots of things that they can use in a potential third series. And we've got Derva Kerwin as Lady Honor Bray, who's the sort of villain of the piece. And obviously one of the things she's famous for is the voice of the Marks and Spencers advert, where she says, you know, it's not just food, it's Marks and Spencers food. And I think there's a little nod to that here, because when she's telling Cleo about Apex, she said, he's not just a thief. She's like a world-class art thief or something like that. And I thought, it's got to be an in-joke about the M&S advert.
Yep. It was nice to have her back again. She does seem to relish a baddie role, doesn't she?
So she's kind of not your typical villain as well. What did you think of Lady Bray?
I think all landlords are villains, so it kind of felt right, personally. I mean, it felt a very now kind of villain in that sense, you know, all that talk about I'm getting these new people in because they've offered more money up front. I was like, anyone who's gone through the London renting system will absolutely be like, oh yeah. So I thought she got off too easy at the end, to be honest.
I mean, King Klavik minds, I mean, honestly.
But I think it's on the nose as well with the themes about like homelessness and refugees, you know, listening to this whilst things are, and clearly not necessarily when this was being written or even recorded, but like in the weeks when sort of just this has come out, that's been forefront on the news.
Definitely.
I do wonder how long it was recorded, because at one point Cleo refers to her as Suella, doesn't she? So it felt like it must be fairly recently, or they, you know, maybe added a line, you know, to make it topical just before it was released.
It's fairly easy to record audio, you know, relatively quickly. So
yeah,
I would just think, because it's not even, because let's see, the first series came out just after Legend of the Sea Devil, wasn't it? Yeah, it was before Power of the Doctor.
Mm.
And this came out a couple of months ago. So I guess it's been about a year between them. But yeah, I would imagine you're right, they've got time to add references in. It's easy, you know, like you say. But I thought it's a Suella, it must be a reference to her. But I was trying to think if it could be referenced to anything else for a moment. But she's been around being terrible for a long time, so you know.
Yes, she has. This is very true.
That's true. But yeah, it felt like specifically referring to her as a Home Secretary, I thought. So that made me think it's fairly recent. But like you say, it could have just been dropped in.
I mean, that was another good point from Cleo as well, you know, talking about this situation with homelessness and forcing people to live in horrible accommodation. And she said, you know, that's what the governments want, but humans care, she said. And that's really true. You know, the average person does not want people to be treated so unfairly and so horribly as the capitalist system allows the 1% to do. You know, it's...
I enjoyed Cleo's character in this series more, because I felt like it's really starting to show her as being more active in her life. You know, she early on, she's, you know, clearly made changes based on what's happened, and you know, she's enrolled in this acting course, and she gets a line at one point saying, "I'm not letting life just happen to me anymore," and I quite sort of liked that. It really sort of summed up, I felt, how she's wants to make changes, not just in her own life, but clearly other people's as well, wants to make more of an impact on the world, and has this desire to, clearly she wants to be able to sort of go off with the Doctor and see more places and do more things. And she's also the age where that's often a common theme for young people. But it's great that it works with having Sarah Jane and Tortured references. They often come back to the idea that, well, you can do all that on your own doorstep as well. There's stuff going on here that you can have an impact on too.
Yes, but to be honest, who wouldn't want to travel with the Doctor for a little while? But
well, quite.
Yes.
I'd love to see her travel with the Doctor.
Definitely, yeah.
That's it. I suppose while we've got Donna back on our screens as we record this as well, that's kind of Donna's story, isn't it? She has one interaction with the Doctor, and then sort of decide, craves that life of excitement and travel and everything, and seeks the Doctor out again. And that's very much like Chloe here, and I suppose shows how she's susceptible to Apex as well, because he can offer her the same sort of adventures and lifestyle and kind of a life beyond the ordinary.
Yeah, and although she's trying to do more with her life, there are quite a few moments where you realise she's not entirely happy with the way things are going. Yeah, she's not happy with her love life, and that's probably impacted by having, Abby and Chawna loved up together, and she's possibly been feeling like the third wheel a bit more now. But also when we see her at, when she goes for her sort of audition for this end of year performance, and it feels like life's been still quite a bit of a struggle, not turning out entirely as she'd like, being able to run off and have a slightly different one and seek something different with the Doctor or Apex seems very appealing.
Yes, but it's good that she's sort of because in the first series, she was estranged from her mum, and she's back with her mum again. They're talking on the phone at least. And it's she's moving on. But of course, early stage of any career, you don't get everything your own way. And that's fair enough.
I can't remember how old is she meant to be.
I think she must be, I'm thinking about 23, I guess, because she's graduated and stuff, hasn't she?
I had in my head, roughly, yeah. But I was struck then when I read up on the actor and realised, the actor's quite a bit older than Cleo. And it's like, I'd never have guessed, because it is such a young voice and tone, and possibly as helped by the stuff you were on about Denise, of the language use, which even at 30 makes me realize I'm not down with the kids anymore.
That's very reassuring. I'm almost 55 and I'm definitely not down with the kids at all, but I'm still willing to learn from them.
Yeah, I think Lois Chimimba, who plays Abby as well, is quite a bit older than a character, because she's in the Saranga Conundrum, isn't she, and seen her in various things. Trust Me, the series she did with Jodie Whittaker, where Jodie Whittaker is pretending to be a qualified doctor, and I think Lois Chimimba plays a fellow doctor, if I remember. So she's a similar sort of age, I think, or a character in that kind of similar sort of age to Jodie Whittaker's character. So I think, a few of them are kind of playing a bit younger, but on audio it's quite convincingly, I think. I got that impression early to mid-20s. They've all met at university, haven't they? And now kind of making their way in the world like that.
Yeah, and there's not lots of time, really, that's passed between the first series and the second series. It's just a short amount, but not loads.
Yeah, and they can't remember the events of the first series as well, or some of them.
Yes. I love this. Yeah, I love this idea that they've called it the redacted virus, and we've lost a whole year, because I just have entire conversations with people on about just the fact that sort of 2020 to 2022 all seem to blur together, and it does feel like you've lost it a year at least.
Yeah, we've been through some strange times.
But then they can remember some bits, can't they? Because they can remember Unit, because I can't remember which character it was now, but it was Abby or Chawna that kind of joined Unit, or was working with UNIT for a while with Osgood, and they all sort of fell out because of that. So yeah, I was surprised that they could remember that part of it.
But yes, Cleo is the only person who can remember the Doctor at all. I mean, they're not even really sure. They talk about a blue box, but they're not quite sure what it is. And
yeah, and Cleo's leaving a lot of messages for the Doctor to eventually pick up on his answering machine, whether it's going to be the 14th or 15th Doctor that gets those, that picks those up. But I guess it's all kind of blown over by that point.
I like the use of that because it kind of works like a diary so that we get to hear Cleo's thoughts of, when she's alone, the stuff she doesn't want to talk about with her friends. It's like a sort of dear doctor, dear diary little message.
Mm. Yes, that's true. It was a very nice device, actually.
I do think the best doctor that she could accidentally send those messages to is the first doctor. I just think that would be funny.
My dear silly child, pull yourself together or I'll give you a good smacked bottom.
That idea that Chloe, sorry, I'm Cleo, I guess that's what you did, Adam, as well.
That's my redacted virus that I've introduced into the group.
The idea that Cleo is kind of looking at things out that give her a chance to maybe meet the Doctor, like investigating the giant rats, it's a bit like Doom, isn't it? Which we've also had this year, which I know you're a massive fan of, Adam, where Doom is sort of seeking out missions that give her a chance to try and meet the Doctor as well. So it seems like there's a lot of the spin-off stuff feels like there's kind of a bit of kind of synergy like that at the moment.
I think it's also what happens when you do a spin-off in Doctor Who. You always have to, it's like I was saying earlier about Doctor-esque figures, you always kind of have to deal with the absence of the Doctor to an extent, which is why it's going to be interesting. If we are approaching some kind of age of spin-offs and Whoniverse, I'm kind of curious how they deal with that on TV. We'll see how it works. So, because there is always a sense of like when your universe is essentially built around one character, when they're not there. Yeah, like I said, there's always like a kind of Doctor-shaped hole in these things, I think.
I mean, Big Finish have managed quite well. But yes, they do need to have somebody to fill the role of the Doctor, as in the Sarah Jane Adventures, like you say, and Class and Torchwood. But yes, I was wondering if the Doctor would make another appearance in this season, of course, as they did at the end of the first season. I mean, it was always a possibility, I suppose, but I hadn't heard any trailers or read anything about it. I just went in cold, as I prefer to do, and ultimately they didn't turn up, and that was a bit of a disappointment, I suppose, because it would have been nice. Which Doctor would have turned up for a start? But maybe next time.
How do we all feel about that? Like you say, Denise, I think having had the Doctor in the first series, it does maybe set that expectation a little bit. And I know Keith is a regular on Track One. He was disappointed by there being no Doctor in this. What about you, Adam and Hannah? Are you expecting the Doctor? Do you feel let down a little bit by that?
I certainly don't feel let down. I wondered and I thought, no, they're not, because you know they're not going to pop this between Power of the Doctor and the Star Beast. And no, I think if a Doctor Who spin-off is going to stand up on its own, it can't rely on the Doctor turning up, because then it's just a delivery system for more Doctor Who, to an extent. So no, I think it's stronger for not having the Doctor in this.
I think you could be right.
I wasn't expecting the Doctor, so I wasn't disappointed to not have any Doctor. And it felt appropriate in the first series because it felt themed around the fact that people are going missing and the Doctor going missing, whereas that didn't feel such a theme in this. It felt like it's something minor early on mentioned, but the other stuff going on sort of took like precedence, and the fact that they were hunting a TARDIS, it for me it didn't necessarily tie that the Doctor was going to be with any TARDIS or what. So no, and I think I agree. Yeah, if I'd like to see more redacted, I think to have it, you've got to get away from that having so many guest characters from the main series in, including the Doctor.
Although I'd like to see Rani again. Rani's a good addition to Rani. The cast.
Yeah, I think I did wonder whether it was partly a result of being in the kind of interregnum period of Doctors and showrunners that, you know, you couldn't easily slot a Doctor in. But I suppose, yeah, you could have brought, like, you know, the fifth or the sixth or seventh Doctor or something in for, you know, kind of a bit of a cameo. I think for me, it's not so much that I think, oh, the Doctor needs to be there, but there's two fake outs where the TARDIS appears that kind of build that expectation. And the first time I listened to it, I was like, oh, great, the Doctor's going to show up. but I think, you know, if there is, and hopefully there are sort of further series than this, if they move it away from looking for the Doctor and you know, having facsimiles of the TARDIS there to fool people.
Yes, and they still think there's only one TARDIS as well, whereas we know there's quite a few knocking around the place. There's the one with me and Clara in it, for a start.
Yeah, and I think the Rani's going to come back soon.
You always say that.
The Rani's always coming back.
Well, as I said the other week, I think the Rani might be the lady in Abu Dhabi that buys the toys from Rose.
Okay, so if the Rani is coming back rather than Rani Chandra, then who's going to play her?
Ooh, who would be a good Rani?
Yeah,
get David Tennant in to do it. Yeah, I mean, he's very good in Wild Blue. You know, you see how chilling he can be in Wild Blue Yonder, and get him back to play a villain. I was going to say get him back to play the Master, but actually, the Rani would be perfect, and he'd understand being a fan. He'd understand what you have to bring to the Rani. So.
Yeah.
And having seen that episode of Rab C. Nesbitt, he does look quite good in drag as well.
Yeah. And that that Netflix Marvel series, he was a brilliant villain in that. I think. I've just, the name of it's gone out of my head.
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, yeah, he was really, really chilling villain in that.
He does play a good villain. I mean, there was a TV series recently where he was quite an evil vicar. And of course, he's played Dennis Nielsen as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah. He was very good in that.
Mm.
I think he needs to be in a Kato Mara wig, though.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a nice homage to Time and the Rani then as well, isn't it? I think you should do the regeneration in a Kate O'Mara wig and then turn into David Tennant. Yeah.
This face gets everywhere. Yes, it's hard to think of someone with like the stature and the chutzpah to like play the Rani now, I suppose.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Maybe that's a good one to ask our listeners for ideas for.
Yes. Answers on a postcard, please.
So we haven't had any announcement about a third series of this, but yeah, hopefully it's something that does continue, because you know, now that we've got this Hooniverse and it seems like it's going to be made up of a few different kind of streams of things, I think it's definitely got its place, hasn't it? It's kind of carved out its own identity and everything, and you know, to have something that's just for BBC Sounds is probably good for that service as well, in terms of bringing new listeners in who will then find other stuff on there.
Yeah, I would like to hear more for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say it's interesting, because in some ways when it came out, you know, just between that Legend of the Sea Devil, Power of the Doctor gap, it felt more RTD than Chibnall in a way, and now just, you know, this coming out just before RTD 2 launches. And given what we've just seen, even just the two episodes we've seen of that so far, it feels like it slots right into what RTD wants to do as well. And I don't think they announced a second series immediately after the first, so there may be a gap before we get any confirmation.
Yeah, and Juno Dawson, who is kind of one of the main writers, is still kind of involved with Doctor Who as one of the hosts of the official Doctor Who podcast. kind of hopefully is there kind of kind of pitching for.
Do you think the official Doctor Who podcast gets 500,000 listeners?
Probably. The advantage they have over us is that they've got Russell T. Davis kind of giving them sound clips and content.
Have you asked him though, Mark? Come on.
You've had Sophie Aldred on. Come on. This is RTD's not that big a step up.
just the next step.
That's it, yeah. certainly something to aim for.
Greyhound Trap 1, over.
Trap 1, go ahead, Greyhound, over.
Well, that's our episode on Redacted Series 2. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much all for joining me. If you'd like to let our listeners know where else they can find you on the internet.
You can find me on The Real McCoy Podcast or Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile. We should have we've had a Harry Sullivan episode out very soon. The next Real McCoy episode will be a little delayed while I'm busy moving house, but we will be back some point in the new year. I guess I'm technically on Twitter, but I'm really not these days. I can't even remember what my Twitter handle is. I think it's at Adam J. Clegg. I'm more on Blue Sky, and I can't remember what my handle on that is as well because it's only like 5 minutes old. Give me a second. You can find me on Blue Sky at adamclegg.bsky.social, and those are the best places to find me.
I am on Twitter still at Mrs. Simon Templar, and I'm on and off at Blue Sky as well at just Hannah Cooper, and you can find various blogs from me at visualmutterings.com.
Thank you very much. And Denise?
And I am at CupOfTea69 on Twitter, and I am Denisery on Mastodon and Blue Sky, but I don't spend as much time there as I could. And there's a link to my blog in my Twitter bio as well if you like Vogon poetry.
Ooh!
I am the worst poet in the known universe, apart from that one who wrote the poem about the Daleks and things.
Yeah. Well, I like your poetry.
Thank you very much. There aren't any new ones in the work, you'll probably see.
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky. I'm Quark McMalus on both. Thank you very much for the invite code, Adam, for Blue Sky. Much appreciated. You can find Trap1 as Trap1_ on Twitter and just Trap1 on Blue Sky. And you can find all our previous episodes at trap1.podbean.com. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.